simply because the Lobtel itself looks upon its own standards as sacrosanct, as law tables unreadable by those beyond the pale and set in adamant upon high, and any violation thereof would be an act of hatred of its law and in violation of same which, established as absolute, could never be contested by the other, who is accordingly vilified as a fascist or racist, etc. Insofar the Lobtel adopts the hegemonic behavior of the Jew in censoring and prohibiting opposition to its power. The perpetual obsessive compulsive disorder over the denial of race as a reality with which it is perpetually in conflict, leads it to have recourse to prohibit speech or any form of semantic communication which might raise awareness of the reality of race and the inequality thereof, and thereby the destruction of its individualistic creed, wherein, absurdly, some are more equal than others, the rich over the poor, certain races over certain others. This also pertains to sexual differences, both of which are palpably obvious myths, and yet which the Lobtel is, via its programming classical conditioning, coerced to affirm as the Lord's truth, the Lord being the totalitarian Lobtel and its attempt to create a reality in its own image. As a consequence of this, Lobtelism establishes the lowest common denominator as the norm and prescribes anything beyond the norm as privilege or taboo, something that might upset the rotten apple cart of egalitarianism based as it is on individualism, which can tolerate no exceptions to its normative devolution of the better type to the level of the lower type, or the extermination of the better type if it is not possible to diminish the latter's brilliance as a means of perpetuating the system's tyranny. Hence the virtue of Lobtelism lies in the denial of racial identity and the reduction of all racial groups to a standardized product boiled down in the global melting pot. Defense of one's own biological group race and its territory is considered hate and violence towards others unless those others are too weak to oppose the regime of Lobtels. This masculine trait the Lobtel considers a negative, born merely of a deluded consciousness which seeks to injure the other as it can't conceive of the fact of biological differences, and therefore ascribes such thoughts to a pathological condition, whereas it is itself pathological in its persistence in the willful denial of reality conceivable only by those not operating in the emotional brain and in a state of willful ignorance cognitive dissonance. The natural inclination towards one's own kin is denied and supplanted with that towards those overtly other to oneself, and this inclination is codified in the law tables of Lobtelism, which applies only to whites who are construed as the colonialist imperialist oppressors and exploiters of non-white victims who play the role of an angelic figure in the religiosity of Lobtelism. As such, the creed is anti-white not only through its prescription of race mixing, but anti-white through its desperate desire to punish white people on the grounds that they are white. To escape this self-contradiction, the hazy-minded Lobtel has recourse to discourse about white supremacy and whiteness as a mere idea or concept, a concept which they and they alone traffic in, and which was invented by their Jewish masters as a psyop to influence whites as a biological group race to commit racial suicide through denying their own existence. Hence defense of one's own group is construed by Lobtelism as white supremacy through the attempt to deny its existence altogether, which is an act of genocide and which accords, consciously or subconsciously, with the plan of global dominion, wherein all will be on again a universalist notion that contradicts itself prima facie, as if difference exists how can there be equality, and if no equality exists why would there be any imperative to equalize the unequal save for the purposes of what the Lobtel calls peace, which is really the annihilation of all organic being and the inevitable death of all life on earth. All life being struggle and a closed entropic system being the cessation of struggle, which leads to a crystallized social structure that quells all motivation and striving for excellence and thereby becomes dysfunctional through negating the dynamism that is life. Given the anti-equals natural character of Lobtelism, it considers the natural relations between the sexes and their conscious awareness thereof as immoral, because naturally based, entailing irreconcilable and insuperable differences without bringing about the destruction of the sexes in their natural identity which libertism seeks to destroy, though of course claiming that it is for the sake of equality which, as in the case of race, destroys the organic being and replaces it with the artificial and formal based on an abstraction called individuality, not biology. Women, being those not biologically inclined to oppose the other, are targeted and utilized as a tool for the destruction of their own biological kin group and their own biological identity, turned against men of their own kind to compete with them under the cover of the equalization for the unequal, and given incentives to undercut their own tribe and its masculine component as an oppressor of their liberty. Given that libertism is a perversion of female consciousness, it more readily appeals to women who identify with its claims of being about love and peace, and opposed to what is construed as hate and violence, because it doesn't partake of pacifism, a trait essential to avoid for the security and preservation of one's own tribe against others whose very existence is denied by libertines through the equalitarian dogma integral to itself. A trait imposed by the Jewish elite to weaken and disable the natural defense mechanisms of those it construes as mere individuals. Thus, through this denial of self-identification with natural roles, another window of opportunity is opened to allow in the floating signifier of gender to wreak havoc upon the tribal group, to create confusion in the minds of that group and ascribe destructive as incompatible identities to otherwise potentially healthy youth. That the libertad's imperialism psychically castrates the white male as a means to advance its tyranny, the recourse of the white male for survival, or at least the appearance of survival, is to play the role of a cuckold, a castrated capon who will slavishly and obsequiously subordinate himself to female and non-white rule, displaying all forms of servile behavior as a condition of his getting along with those who portray themselves as oppressed victims of his past villainies, and for which he must expiate his sin through self-abasement, flagellation and denial, in other words, to live as the undeared, continuing to prop up a society of parasites as the undeared drone who is exploited by their despotism. A denial of the reality principle, namely the recognition of the existence of an objective reality which serves as the ground upon which existence is played out and from whence it derives, as a means of perpetuating the function of the self-serving ego's praxis, which takes the form of a situational ethics and a moral relativism that enables the realization of the maxim in principle. Denying reality is accomplished through substitution of a hazy gauze of possibilities that shut out the hard truth the libertad can't cope with, as it runs contrary to the maxim in principle. Hence objectivity is subverted through its subjectivization. Truth capitalized becomes truths pluralized, and in lower case, your truth or the perception of the individual perpetuates the sovereignty of the individual as an abstract raceless cosmopolitan ideational construct in contradistinction to the rooted member of a tribe who exists as an objective reality in a given time and place and sustains its being therein, and with the death of the tribe, the blood and soil, race and place, dies itself. The hegemony of individualism here serves the global tyranny to supplant organic being with artificial non-being, a simulacral fiction supplanting a concrete fact, playing into the hands of the builders or architects of the destruction of organic life for the construction of their Judeo-Freemasonry, building the whited sepulchre of humanity over the graves of races and their traditions. Hence fact is perverted in an idea, statements of truth into statements of opinion and belief, faith in the gods into faith in the priestly caste of syntism and technocracy. Rendered homeless through the severing of the roots which bind him to the soil and the tree of lineage, being uprooted, the being is now rendered a malleable being whose identity is mere putty in the hands of the controllers, shaping him in their own image as a raceless and sexless cosmopolitan economic unit to be bought and sold on the stock market, transported around the globe through shipping and logistics networks to be disposed of when its utility has expired. The inevitable effect on consciousness through this loss of identity is a vacuum that is filled with prefabricated symbols, ideologies and standardized behaviors, and vocabulary which leaves the appearance of possibilities for being open to all and sundry, but leads instead to an empty superficiality, wherein all is consumed by the cosmopolite who is a citizen of the world, having no loyalty to anyone or anything and rendering everything quantitative as another consumer object or idea or hobby, source of fun. Thus the individual who is the useful tool of the global elite constructs and deconstructs his identity, which becomes a protean entity having no stability nor playing any role in the traditional sense, such as a fisherman in a fishing village or an artisan in a town crafting shoes or fine furniture and apprenticing his offspring for the continuance of his craft. Rather, the craftsman of bureaucracy wrench through the burden of taxation the shoe and all from the craftsman's hand, pluck him as a berry from the tree and digest him in their global system. From the country to the city, from freedom and self-determination, freedom is an organically constituted Dasein, to the illusion of boundless freedom under the hegemony of other determination of one's identity as an economic unit, a quantity of value substitutable by any other formerly free being whose identity is subverted through this same quantitative process. Hence the reality of race is substituted for the fiction of raceless universalism, the reality of soil for that of a concrete jungle of cubicles and condos, the Sata square of Saturnian quantity where all is at its densest and least spiritual. All is an object of the knowledge of the controllers, and all knowledge in the sense of traditions is reduced to a superficialized commodity that as a simulacra of the original, which can no longer be what it is as it is wrenched out of time and place and the conditions of its being what it is. The infantilism of libertism underscores its contradictions in the case of vehement protests against capitalism, free markets, and state totalitarianism, which taking the form of totalitarian legislation that becomes what it protests. It is based upon an infantilism, a narcissism, the desire of the libertad to control every facet of existence as it cannot tolerate a lack of control and always wants everything to be crafted in its own image and serving its own purpose. Living in this infantile state of an inability to delay gratification necessitates a control freak's behavior, as everything that exists must serve its purpose. This is why libertarian societies always follow the communist model of centralization, as these control freak architects of Judeo-Masonry can't simply live and let live. Simultaneously, the infantile mindset of the libertad reaches outwards for an external authority that can shelter it from the storm and stress of the natural world. This is the reason why those in the country typically repudiate libertadism, and why most cities are infected with this mental illness as their infantile wants so that the status quo can be maintained with relative peace and security. The difference between country and city life is that between nature and anti-nature, and given libertadism's cancerous growth in urban environments and relative absence in the country, it clearly indicates its anti-natural character, which, as applied to individuals, destroys their organic nature, also rendering them perfect cogs in the urban machine. The anti-natural political praxis which is a result of libertadism shows itself in the forced integration of diametrically opposed natures races, which leads to the destruction of their identity and culture, which in turn reduces all to the end product of a melted pot of quantity, the universal germplasm of the Jew world order, which then molds this characterless mass into its useful golem and goyim. Thereby natural, organic authenticity is subverted and supplanted by antinatural inauthenticity. Within a state of nature, Dasein can develop itself out of itself organically as a being rooted in the world shaped and conditioned by them. From thence is established the Superman, who can transcend in immanence the given circumstances of his material being, though not through a forcible separation therefrom or wrenching from his spatio-temporal context, his tradition. Through this alchemical process, the base metals can be transformed into the philosophical gold of urban insight. To rip from the soil the budding flower is to destroy it and supplant it with the noxious weeds of miscegenation. The gardeners of the Jew world order seek to regularize the rose of this garden into a weed garden bereft of flowers. In terms of Lutzids, they merely carry out their programming, having been instilled with a suicidal psyop through classical conditioning in the media and child abuse centers called schools, which carries with it the ethical imperative to deliberately extol the putative virtues of the non-white other and to denigrate and devalue the qualities and attributes of the white race of which they are members through blinding themselves to the fact through cognitively dissonant psychophysiological processes such as overactivation of the limbic system, which is induced through their classical conditioning education. Thus, anything which is non-white is virtuous, and conversely for that which is white, even going so far as to deny the existence of white identity and culture. This neurotic inhibition and repression of natural instincts and tendencies, in combination with the fundamental principle of Lutzidism, the pleasure or maxim in principle, creates tension in one's being which is not transmuted intellectually or rationally, as this latter state is unattainable for the Lutzid, who then seeks perverse outlets for this surfeit of sexual energy not properly utilized. From the Catholic pedophile priest to the left-hand path black magician, sexual practice is invariably deviant from the natural practice of the conception of children and healthy intimacy within traditional ritual or ceremonial practices. Hence sodomy, an unnatural violation of the use of the generative organs, and a black magic act of attempting to generate magical children demons, etc., as well as a mockery of the traditional world, whose generative vitality or fecundity is subverted to an act of sterility. The self-abasement imperative which inheres in the mind of the Lutzid manifests itself in the form of other unnatural acts such as BDSM and self-abuse, devolving further down the satanic spiral towards vampirism, cannibalism and torture murder, the occult hallmarks of the Judeo-Masonic black magic theocracy. In place of eugenics and the improvement of the tribe through itself as a manifestation of its evolutionary destiny, is proffered the devolved unto men sight of race mixed gender confused humanity, the bipedal being who serves as a labor pool or collection of quantized economic units, substitutable one for another. Whether under a communism or a capitalism, the reduction to the lowest common denominator is the tendency with all superlative faculties rendered superfluous and only a base residue of vulgarity remaining as the distillate of this melted pot of fecal matter. The Lutzid, in spite of intellectual pretensions, eagerly follows this downward path, chasing his sensationalistic thrills, being driven on by the endless quest for supranormal stimuli to maximize dopamine secretions and sate his insatiable libido. Gaia is the god of Lutzidism, as it is a thoroughly materialistic ideology, and this feminized god form is Mother Mater incarnate, the fleshly form of the feminine principle, the lowest level of material density and lowest vibration of energy fields. The pleasure principle or libido functions as its holy ghost, which is the paradoxically feminized form of the masculine principle of dynamic force and inner self-creation, a creation which is simply a destruction through the wanton expenditure of sexual energy in attempts to attain the maximum pleasure with the least pain. Governed by the maxim in principle, the Lutzid invariably becomes a sexaholic, often a drug and alcohol addict, and a cowardly subordinate to the external authority of the priestly caste, who permit it to draw its allocated quantity of pleasure from the well of socially accepted practices, which is forever expanding in breadth and depth as the Lutzids ratchet up the levels of dopamine, serotonin, and other pleasure chemicals in their brains beyond the limits of sustainable function, thereby precipitating the destruction of society and themselves, or their being usurped by the greater force of the natural order, wherein new traditions are built on the ruins of the old. The previous architecture of the old order was raised by the firestorm of sexual energy finally unleashed from the inhibition of Christ insanity, and will end in destroying itself and being rebuilt by a new order respecting nature both earthly and cosmic. Lutzidism, willfully or not, is the anarchist's bomb that terminates the anti-natural hegemony of Judeo-Christ insanity and clears the path for tomorrow, where Lutzids will be anathema. The black magician leading the charge of the horseman of the apocalypse is the Jew, and behind him are his minions, the Freemasons. Following their lead are the witless minions and corrupt masses who carry on with their drudgery serving the war machine of Zion as it races over the globe harvesting souls along its bloody trek. The witless masses at lower levels have no understanding of that which exists above them and thus blindly follow the path of their masters, the organic lie, following the path of the lie to perdition. Amongst this hierarchy of evil, those at higher levels are more cognizant of their surrounding circumstances and the actual meaning and purpose of the projects of their leadership, and thus partake to increasing degrees of the false light of the luminescence of the dark side of the Force, and thereby to increasing burdens of karma. The higher in the hierarchy, the more false, hypocritical, devious, self-serving and psychopathic one becomes, and only they who demonstrate this behavior are enabled to elevate themselves within the hierarchy of the dark forces. Indeed, these are the defining traits of the black magician, which qualifies him as such, and this by definition, using occult forces for personal profit, and this at the expense of others and visiting harm upon others as a means of enriching himself. The constellation of traits defining the black magician are as follows: a mendacity, the propensity toward habitual lying and misrepresentation of fact; a cunning and guileful mentality, one oriented around a mercurial intellectualism, a fondling at a tactical level the realization of his base ends; selfishness, which, on the flip side, may be conceived of as a complete lack of other regard, a devotion to the self in its phenomenal aspect and all that related thereto. Correlated with this is a propensity to be greedy, to devote oneself to the accumulation of the things of this world, be it famine or material fortune or both. Sadism is another defining trait, which is a form of their power madness and which derives from their egotistical personality. One might say megalomaniacal personality, all of that which gratifies one's ego, and its power-mad obsession being this defining trait of the sadist who derives sexual hedonic gratification through the abuse of others, and which underscores their general lack of regard for others. As will be examined in the following, the traits of the black magicians transcend their own individual will and they are impelled by the entities with whom they traffic, becoming ever more under their influence through their quid pro quo relationship therewith should they not have been born into it, those being born into the cabal being subject to generational curses by these same entities. Indeed, it must be acknowledged that most of these black magicians are a product of generational curses and are antenatally impelled and influenced in their thought and action by these same entities. The very conception of the black magician antenatally is accompanied by entities who assist in the formation of the being, the incarnating soul being conditioned by these entities to form a relationship with them should they not have had any prior relationship therewith during the cycle of reincarnations in past lives. Thus, the behavior of the black magician is not entirely their own, but rather is an amalgam of entity and self, the former having a preponderant influence over the latter, and the latter serving as a patient in relation to an agent who is the bitch in the relationship and who must carry out his master's whims in order to receive temporal rewards, rewards within the astral or specialized knowledge and instructions on this earth to enrich himself. Thus, the behavior of the black magician is the behavior of the possessed, though exceptions to the rule might apply with the influence of the entities not being sufficiently strong to hold the personality of the black magician in total bondage, or even exert an influence strong enough to render the latter a passive figure in the relationship. The relationship of master and slave presumably works both ways, with the black magician being more or less dominant depending on the power he has accumulated in this or in past lives. The power source for the black magicians of this contemporary world largely derives from the Kabbalah of Dri, which the tribe of egomaniacal despots has assimilated in his wanderings throughout the earth, and taking here a little, their little from the cultures of their host, and perversely synchronizing it into their own thing, and using whatever particular techniques and tactics to serve their own personal and tribal ambitions directed toward the world and its enslavement according to their dominion mandate. This mandate is simply a later codification of their conscious mind in theology, and they have sought to occupy and enslave the earth for millennia since their creation by the dark forces who they serve to this day, and from whom they derive much of their underhanded and devious tactics. The Kabbalah, some who have claimed, only became of mature formulation by Isaac Delaria during the Middle Ages, and was a syncretic byproduct of the theft of the German Kala. Middle Eastern and Mediterranean earlier syncretisms and organically derived spiritual practices. The earlier Egyptian Kabbalah was undoubtedly plagiarized and assimilated into that of the later Hebrew and that of Babylon, and before that its geographic antecedent Sumer, which was subjected to a like treatment. The various spiritual practices of various subgroups of humanity had become syncretized along the Silk Road by the merchant caste and their elective affinities between diverse groups, their common bond that served as an earlier template for modern masonry and one of its exoteric formations in the religion of Christianity, spiritual Israel. Thus, through the ruthless cosmopolitan traders of the Near and Far East, a combination of diverse races and cultures were melted together into the Jewish type of Mammon worshipper. However, the Jewish type pre-existed this formation and coalesced into an extension of this formless mass of globalism, expanding itself in power and numbers tumescently over the globe and spreading its black magic with it, penetrating as a parasitical symbiont into the host body of nations and assimilating them into itself. The origins of Masonry are shrouded in the mists of time, but there has been in existence a certain form of Semitic black magic that has plagued the earth since the time of Egypt and Babylon, and now appears in modern Masonry as Albert Pike's Morals and Dogma and Manly P. Hall's The Secret Teachings of All Ages bear witness to. The modern syncretisms of black magic are not the original masonry one might conjecture, but are subsequent distortions of the polar tradition of Atlantis and its Aryan founders, who had later been subject to Jewish infiltration as the usual modus operandi of the parasite for its symbiotic supplantation from power of its host. Nevertheless, to all appearances, masonry in its current form constitutes the blueprint of the black magicians, not only in their political praxis, but in that of their magical practices, the two being flip sides of the same shekel of Jewish power madness, and by extension the power madness of the Gentile Masons. The political motivation of Masonry, at least as far as the writer can surmise, not being privy to the contemporary situation of Masonry, has historically been the formation of Solomon's Temple, the construction of a Jewish-controlled super-government with Dre, and, at least to the extent Dre has led the Gentile Masons to understand, Gentile Masonry ruling the world as the initiatic priest-kings over all the profane masses. This political agenda is best described by Lady Queensborough in the title of her work Occult Theocracy – A Theocracy of the Dark Forces Over Here, based upon ally of the organic lie of Dre, based upon the primordial lie of the Demiurge, who they refer to as the GAOTU. At lower levels and exoterically in religious dogma, the God referred to in the Judeo-Christian exotericism is the same being, and thus any pretense of opposition between the Masonic elite and Christian laity and clergy is nothing but smoke and mirrors put forth as yet another lie in the dialectic of good versus evil, with each side playing their role as antitheses awaiting reconciliation through the higher levels' orchestrated destruction and chaos, giving themselves an excuse to impose their world order, their Masonic despotism, as the Protocols of the Elders of Zion speaks of. The tactics the black magicians employ to wrest from the hands of legitimate possessors of their own culture and identity so that the dark forces may melt down all distinct organic being in the furnace of their political alchemy are as follows: 1. Revelation of the method. 2. Double blind. 3. Inversion. 4. Simulacra. 5. Trauma-based mind control. 6. Scapegoating or karmic cop-out. These are the staple of their repertoire of black magic tricks. In the first case, the black magician, in order to deceive their marks and dupes, attempt to cheat God in the sense of giving their mark an opportunity to avoid the harm the black magician seeks to visit upon them. Should the mark agree, the blame for the act of the black magician, according to his own flawed logic, transfers to his victim, thereby blaming the victim for his sins. The choice of harm avoidance offered typically comes in the form of a subtle and, for the vast majority of people, unknown meaning or hinting at the consequences, as the black magician would bring it into being to suit his selfish ends. Thus his cunning manipulation tactics are employed as a means of deceiving his mark and leading the dupe into not opposing the imposition of the black magician, thereby enabling the latter to succeed in his plans. These typically entail visiting harm or loss upon the victim and enriching himself through that process in the form of temporal or hedonic power or profit. To reveal to the dupe what the black magician had intended to do to him without the dupe knowing, unless he is knowledgeable about occult science, and thereby attempting to scapegoat the dupe and expiate his sins. Double blind is another tactic which is built into the revelation of the method. To enable one's enemy to know what is being done to him without him being able to stop the act, and moreover to reveal in a concealed matter what he wishes to perpetrate against him, puts the mark in a double blind, having placed the key outside of his cage into which he has been placed by the imposition of the black magician, just beyond his reach, so that the victim is forced to decipher the appropriate means to escape and, failing to do so, is not only harmed but is displayed in his ignorance and made aware, however dimly, of the fact. A further tactic of the black magician is that of inversion. Reality as it is perceived by those they wish to exert influence upon is deliberately and certainly with malice aforethought distorted or modified in a way that leads their mark or dupe down the path of destruction most profitable to the black magicians. The mark is confused and deceived by false appearances contrived by the black magician, inverting reality in portraying that which is true as false or not real, and that which is false or not real as true, and thus influencing the mark to act according to this misinformation and misrepresentation of facts. The false appearances the black magician screens themselves behind are simulacra, by definition, an identical copy for which no original ever existed, a counterfeit or fake image of reality overlaid or superimposed upon reality, thus obscuring it. A tactic which applies to all of the above in the occult were waged against the forces of light by the Judeo-occult forces of Judaism and Freemasonry, is that of trauma-based mind control, the general tactic of the anesthetization of the mind which subjects its victims to a state of fear and a destabilization of the conscious mind, which then leaves the mark in a state of confusion and uncertainty, and thus neutralizes any action which the mark might otherwise undergo contrary to the will of the black magicians of Zion. The trauma created is, in the political alchemy of these mages of the dark side of the force, ascribed to different causes, to scapegoats upon whom their own sins are conferred and served up to their dupes as a sacrifice, thereby employing a simulacrum of the guilty party. The cases of Leo Frank blaming a Negro for his rapine of a white girl, or that of Arabs being blamed for 9/11 by the Jews, are illustrative of this procedure. Not only the trauma created but the consequences of the trauma are instrumental in their designs. In the former case, and to simultaneously expand and intensify the structure of their control system. Thus the dialectic of Ordo Abe Chau is a perpetual motion machine controlled and manipulated by the wizards of Zion, hiding behind the curtain of appearances of simulacra and simulations which they have woven as their Mayavic veils to hide in plain sight. This is the mechanism of destabilization they employed as a means of wresting control from their hosts, blaming what they do upon others, and through this gradualistic means of ingratiating and providing false gifts to the rulers, taking over the Gentile nation from within as a symbiont merging with its host. Eventually the parasitical symbiont completely supplants its host in the positions of power, relegating the host to the slave caste, as was done in Egypt under the Hyksos or in the Soviet Union. Should they fail to ingratiate themselves with their host, they will then use proxies to do away with the host, blaming the host for what they do and keeping their hands clean, turning the lower class or foreign imports against the ruling class after rendering the upper caste corrupted and decadent, separated from the population. The masses of the Gentiles who have been hooked into the Judaized lodges of Masonry have become twice the child of hell of the Jew, and are bound through ties of black magic witchcraft to the entities Dre traffics with and who Dre is presumably interbred with and servile to. This may be called the infernalization process which the Masons undergo. Those who are generational Masons have no need of any process of possession, as they are bred in the bone with these entities in a symbiotic relationship such that, to a greater or lesser degree, they are these entities' vehicle or instrument on the earth plane. The end product of the zomification process at whatever point in the cycle of incarnations is the ZOMBIE, the aspirant on the path to perdition, the black magician, becomes rather than Superman, and infrahuman, playing host to demons, and in his magical practice he becomes ever more a slave and a Z.I.O.N., a mere husk of his former self, merged into the hive mind of the Prince of Darkness, who exerts his influence on the lower level nodes of his mind, will become assimilated into spiritual Israel, into the demiurgic hive mind, no longer having any autonomy of consciousness. The rites and rituals of modern Masonry are formally designed to bind the entered apprentices of the great work to this coterie of entities and to their GOTU. They employ Hebrew language and symbolism throughout, and thus are serviceable to Dre and their masters, tying the Gentile Masons into the thought forms, and ultimately into the entities who constitute the dark forces who prey upon the population of this world. Though the Gentile Masons understand themselves to be predatorial Lucifers who have a divine right to rule over others owing to their enlightened state of being, illuminated with the false light of the dark forces, they are nonetheless mere servitors of these forces. Thus they are prey to these forces and predate only upon those who are inferior to them in temporal power within the realm of the Demiurge. Thus they seek to reign in hell, and not to live in heaven above the lower realms of the Prince of Darkness. At lower levels, the laity of exoteric religion are also the servitors of their dark master, only even more disempowered with the temporal powers of black magic, and thus even more susceptible to the atrophy of their souls and their assimilation into the Demiurge, both in vivo and post-mortem. Given that all mainstream religions serve the on, especially Judeo-Christianity, it follows from the premises that they are little more than magic squares in which the worshipper becomes trapped and has his soul absorbed into that which they worship, not only through a soul atrophy through supplication of their master binding themselves to the Prince of Darkness through energetic ties, but beyond this failing to strengthen their soul for purposes of both defense and attack against that which threatens what they should in their right mind value and support the existence of, namely, themselves as an individual and all of that which the dark forces threaten. Black magic is defined as the utilization of occult forces to harm others and to profit oneself. In and of itself, this may not be a bad thing. It is only considered bad within the Judeo-Christian paradigm of values, the values of magic and morality, of good versus evil, wherein the good is portrayed as a pacifistic turning of the cheek and a pathologically altruistic doing unto others as they would have them do unto oneself, in other words, a refusal to defend oneself and an obligation to serve others without limit or qualification save that they too subscribe to and uphold the Magian ideology of do unto others. Evil within this paradigm of Magian morality is defined as an active and aggressive behavior that harms others and all that does not help others. Hence, according to this morality of good versus evil, the black magician is per se evil. However, outside of the prohibition against the usage of magic in Judeo-Christianity, the ethics nonetheless accommodate the waging of Jezebelum, at least within the theology of Thomas Aquinas, which became canonical for the Judaized Roman Church. On this basis, the usage of magic may be considered a tactic of the just war, though not being consistent with the prohibition of magical practice by Judeo-Christianity. According to a properly understood theory of justice, to employ occult forces to attack others in self-defense is just this according to cosmic law. Within the framework of cosmic law, that which destabilizes the harmony of existence is bad, or to employ a Judeo-Christian term, evil, and that which rectifies such a destabilization of the balance of justice is good. The Egyptian conception of mat weighing one's heart against the feather to assess whether one's soul will continue in the afterlife applies and presents the idea in an image. The agent who draws first blood or violates the other is he who is blameworthy and thus deserves to be subject to an appropriate punishment in order to subjugate the harm that the black magician has visited upon the other. The karmic processes or cycles introduced by the black magician manifest in their ripple effect and radiate back upon the black magician through the myriad agents affected by the ripples. Hence all become attuned to God in time, and those who seek to transcend the bounds of time are nonetheless affected in some way during this process simply by virtue of living in time as a physical being, and are thus subject to the laws of spatio-temporality, of karma. Regardless of this fact that everything affects everything to a degree, the laws of the cosmos dictate that should one seek the perpetuation of their being as an individual, one must adhere to these laws, which are in no way a static state of affairs, but a dynamic process on the ocean of being. One's existence in this ocean necessitates skillful oarsmanship and navigation, as well as the strength and willpower to guide oneself along his course. This means, in concrete terms, self-defense should one be attacked. Given that the individual is part of a collective and has a duty toward his collective, he must of necessity oppose that which threatens his collective, and in the appropriate way. The attacker must hence be opposed, and this, within the context of the occult, war necessitates the utilization of magical means of self-defense and other attackers' effective strategy of self-preservation and indeed self-empowerment. One has no obligation to unduly limit himself, and as Giovanni Gentile said in his The Doctrine of Fascism, man must and will make his own law, and such a law may or may not be coherent with the harmony of existence. They who live in the truth live a just life in accordance with the sum total of being, and on that basis their lives are conducive to a greater overall harmony. Those, on the other hand, whose lives are discordant and cause greater overall harm than harmony, are bad in the sense of the biblical conception of a tear, or children of the wicked one. Hence the wheat or harmonious are good within the conception of cosmic law, and those who are the tears are bad. However, both play their role and have their reason for being, and thus develop through their actions the divine plan. Accordingly, and paradoxical as it may sound, the orchestration of chaos by the good against the children of the wicked one is itself good, as it conduces to greater overall harmony than harm, being a negation of the negation and establishing a condition of potentiality to be something beyond a mere static inertia, a basis upon which to build one's own world, and this in accordance with the divine will manifesting itself through the will of the harmonious collective. Within the context of this world of the Prince of Darkness, that collective is the white race in the main and in potentia, and all the non-whites were capable of resonating with the divine will and acting harmoniously and justly, that is, in accordance with truth. For the white race specifically, the 23 words are essential in their proper manifestation of their particular will being attuned to deity. They are both particular and universal. What is good for the white race is of the highest virtue. What is bad for the white race is the ultimate sin. Given that whites are they who by nature and in essence resonate with the sum total of being, it follows from the premises that what is good for the white race is the highest virtue, and what is bad for the white race is the ultimate sin, ultimate insofar as this world is concerned and any condition of harmony is to be sustained or established therein. Hence can be seen the compatibility of the ethics of Christianity and the 23 words of the creativity movement when understood in the light of truth. Both creeds adhere to a conception of the just war, and both creeds permit aggressive force, what has been inappropriately called violence. Only in the case of Judeo-Christianity it serves Jewry and their fanatical obsession with their dominion mandate and the destruction of the white race, and in the mandate for the preservation of white people inherent in the 23 words, positing the good of whites as the highest virtue and the antithesis. Accordingly, a just war must be waged for the preservation of the white race, and, given that only the willfully ignorant and weak adhere to a suicide creed, one must use any and all means to ensure their survival. This necessitates the prudent application of force, and given that the wise is no Judeo-Christian, he will employ magical means, if overall beneficial, to ensure his race's survival, and by extension his own survival as a member thereof. For to fail to ensure the survival of his race, he ensures his own destruction. Tactically, one must develop himself into an able magician of his own in order to oppose the enemy which seeks his subjugation, and ultimately his genocide as a collective racial group. Clearly, Dre and all of their allies seek the death of whites, and thus rational self-defense necessitates an appropriate form, and this is both physical and metaphysical, the former both an informational and physical warfare, the latter a magical. Given the scope and power of the globalized police state of Zion, one would be foolish if he did not have at least as great power to attempt to physically oppose the enemy, and when the enemy makes informational warfare illegal, magical means are the most effective recourse as a form of defensive attack against the belligerent enemy. For those not initiates and not versed in the practice of magic, it is indeed a difficult matter to understand the appropriate path of magic one must follow and to understand how to follow it. Hence he must simply either come upon they who are the adepts who might guide him along the path, else stumble haphazardly in the dark and experiment with that which he has a lack of understanding of, hoping by trial and error to puzzle out solutions to the problems. Of course, there exist grimoires and books available containing basic principles of magical practice, and these must be consulted as an imperative should one wish to guide himself prudently along life's course and be effective in the occult war, avoiding the potential harms of the entities of the enemy assailant, protecting himself against the enemy, and actively striking out at the enemy through effective magical means. Such sources as Joy of Satan Ministries and Dharmanism are some of the few known sources of non-Judeo-Magian occultism available to the writer. The Masonic and Jewish Kabbalistic literature he would evaluate as serviceable to Dre and the entities with whom they are bound, and thus an ineffective path, veritably entangling oneself in their spider's webs and allowing himself to become subjugated by the enemy by attempting to use the enemy's weapons upon them, which are designed to service the enemy and not the enemy of his enemies, namely himself and his folk. Joy of Satan Ministries may very well be a contrivance of the cabal. Its magic is a constructed synthesis of various, to all appearances, non-Judeo-Christian magic, from the runes to yoga and other methods of psychic attack, energy work, and ritualistic cursing of the enemy. Though this virtual organization may have its value, the writer unfortunately regrets he is not able to claim its legitimacy, and certainly doubts its authenticity as regards original Aryan practice. Ernst Schartel's work Magic, History, Theory, Practice is a basic guidebook for presumably authentic spiritual practice of a left-hand half variety, though it is inadequately detailed to serve as a comprehensive work. Apparently Adolf Hitler annotated portions of the work and was mentored by Schartel, according to some claims. The Arminists with whom the National Socialists were affiliated may very well have been authentically Aryan occultists. However, what little remains of their publicly available works is not a sufficiently detailed corpus to provide one with an adequate guide to practice and to develop oneself into a powerful occultist in the war against the rabbinate and their affiliated black magicians. Such works as Holy Rune Might, Sivrid Adolf Kummer, The Zenith of Humanity, Rudolf Jonkors Leben, The Secret of the Runes, Guido von Liszt, and others also serve as basic primers to develop some level of capacity, but do not go beyond a basic level of runic yoga and similar rudimentary practices. Adolf Hitler critiqued these venerable greybeards in Mein Kampf, presumably referring to von Liszt, but his association with the SS Black Order and Fallgesellschaft is not known in any depth to the public as far as the writer is concerned. The magical series Introduction to Magic, by the Ur Group, which was under the aegis of Julius Evola, also provide a fair amount of general and properly called introductory material, but don't go into any depth in terms of practices that can either defend oneself or others or attack one's enemies. Hence they are more theoretical than practical. The conceptions in Evola's works The Metaphysics of Sex appear valid and are represented in the works of Miguel Serrano, the path being that of left-hand path tantric matana, that of transcendence, the yoga of power, which was yet another of Evola's works. Such practices build spiritual power, but don't give any details as to how to direct this power against others. They may be used accordingly to strengthen the self, but not employed as particular tactics of occult warfare. This applies also to his work The Doctrine of Awakening, on Buddhist varieties of ascesis, which prescribes a Buddhistic dry path of active nihilism, which Evola also wrote of in his article The Active Nihilism of Friedrich Nietzsche. Hence the works of Evola are valuable in developing power, cultivating a transcendent personality, and through this means enhancing one's defensive capabilities. However, they are in no way a repository of arcane lore that may gird one with the attack weapons necessary in the occult war against the enemy. Yet another offering of arcane wisdom and guidance along the path of initiation is that of Miguel Serrano, who, being an initiate at a high level of arcanist lore, presented various techniques and means of developing oneself according to the polar gnosis of ancient Atlantis. However, he was not too forthcoming with any sufficiently detailed works that enable one to engage in the war against the black magicians of Zion. His Arminism is presented in Tribarclues in the main and is oriented toward the magnum opus of self-development, of attaining immortality, immortalizing the perishable aspects of the soul through a similar integralist path to Genin and Evola achieving the rubedo phase of hermetic alchemy. Serrano does not prescribe any tactical advice either, and this is probably a deliberate policy of adherence to his code of ethics of not casting pearls before swine, not allowing the profane access to the mysteries that would enable them to pervert the arcane lore of the tradition. This mistake of allowing unworthy elements into the mysteries had been made in the past, and the Jewish black magicians have been the result of admitting into the mysteries they who were unworthy of the higher knowledge, knowledge properly so called. Hence, attempting to follow in the footsteps of all of the foregoing magical past can only go so far and can only furnish one with a distorted understanding of truth. Perhaps this is why Genin had recourse to confining himself with the pseudo-tradition of Abrahamic syncretism called Islam, as he had no other existent tradition to follow. Should one attempt to involve himself in the occult were as a black magician against black magicians, he must go it alone and, through prudent skill and one-pointed concentration of attention, the active engagement in this war must be waged in a non-traditional setting. One must sort out what works and what does not, employing a higher intuition to understand what coheres with the cosmic laws that influence all action within the phenomenal plane, and to act prudently and effectively. He who observes the presented ideas and templates in the various works on magic must be selective and consistent in his selection, being guided by the wisdom of reason, asking the following questions. 1. What adheres to or is consistent with cosmic law in terms of the prescribed practices? Does it resonate with oneself and one's understanding of being? 2. Has one, as a precondition of asking such a question, placed himself in a certain state of mind and body such that his higher intuition enables him to answer this question, to make a proper selection of materials that 3. Strengthen one as a blueprint for the building of the armor of the living God that he is in potentia, and 4. Girt one with the battle axe and weapons of war necessary to fight the occult war against the enemy. The various works outlined above serve as a starting point along the path of developing occult power and influence. Perhaps some would find such a course desirable, but their personal subjective desires must be laid aside and condemned, as this type of action is what the enemy wants. This is why the enemy orchestrates their false flag operations to frame and slander the Aryan race and attempt to associate them with irrational violence, mental illness, and all manner of other negative and defamatory traits. The Aryan race must thus recognize, 1, that they are in a war, 2. Who their enemy is, and 3. What they do in terms of tactics and strategies to fight against us. That their tactics and strategies are in no way confined to the realm of the world, but that they operate first and foremost in higher dimensions and thus manifest in concrete too through the causality of Kabbalistic magic. That they work with and for entities who have a certain nature, and that these entities are vampiric lower astral beings who are capable of transdimensional existence manifesting in both the physical visually observable plane and in non-visible more subtle planes. To know the enemy is to defeat them. To remain in an agnostic state is to fail to oppose them and to in effect give up the fight and lay down before the enemy, who will then exploit and enslave to an even greater degree the denizens of this world and genocide the Aryan population through mixture with non-Aryans and or overt slaughter. Most importantly, the Aryan must recognize, for who he is and why he is here, that he is a warrior who has incarnated to liberate the earth from the enemy, the Jews and the reptilian masters and lower level Menians. They must recognize, 5, how to give battle, and this in the most precise and specific form. The physical battle is not available to all, and only certain people within the proper positions or able to get into these positions may play this role. Others may play other roles. The ancient Aryan caste system of Brahmins, warriors, traders and artisans and serfs applies. Though the current system has introduced a regression of castes from higher to lower and has inverted the caste system into its current form, where truly the last has become first and the first has become last, there nonetheless exist certain types who embody the castes within themselves and must do their best to ride the tiger of the postmodern world of social chaos. Therefore, the available socio-economic functions or roles the enemy society has to offer are unsuited to the person, and thus one must simply play his own role according to his nature. Though he may have been demoted to a level beneath his proper nature, he may still attempt to develop his proper nature in light of the occult war, building power and strength within his proper domain, in past lives having been a priest, a warrior or craftsman. All areas must know themselves and play their proper role in the cosmic war in order to gain a final victory of the black magicians of Zion and liberate Gaia from the system of violence and slavery. They must not only become who they are, according to their inner being or essence, but become who they are, Hyperboreans, and this through the magnum opus, the great work of becoming a living god. Counter-tradition René Guénon, the so-called traditionalist, is touted as the foremost representative of the traditionalist school, which is a formulation of perennial philosophy. He became a convert to Islam as he was unable to become a convert to Advaitin owing to his not having been born into a certain caste in India. Though having converted to Islam, his understanding of what he calls the tradition is a partial truth and expression in his practical spiritual path, one inadequate and lacking, as one must infer by implication, a proper understanding of the tradition.